Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for hanging out with me, TGIF people. The weekend is here. It is upon us. We have made it. Welcome to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. Again, thank you, everybody, for hanging with me on this lovely, beautiful, sunny Friday morning here in St. Louis. And I don't know if anybody's looked at the calendar, but it is dun-dun-dun, Friday the 13th. But, you know, Friday the 13th is like a lot of everything, like a lot of things, is that, you know, I'll simplify it and say it's only what you put into it. If you put a lot of belief in it, if you put a lot of stock in it, you know, the myths that surround it may come true for you. If not, you know, it's just going to be a normal, regular Friday for you. But with that in mind, Friday the 13th sometimes means that, well, just about anything can happen, and usually does here at Conservative Cauldron Radio. And again, we are, like always, we are loaded up and ready to go. Tons of stuff to talk about today, and I'm sure that everybody can probably guess. You know, even though we had a presidential debate this week, the story of what is going on at the University of Missouri has really been kind of front and center. And there are a lot of us here locally, I think, that, we're starting to wonder when will there be some national news about St. Louis and the surrounding area and our state that will actually be good, that will actually be positive, because you know, starting with Ferguson last year and, you know, going on straight into what's going on right now, there hasn't been a whole lot of good national news. You know, I got to wonder what people must be thinking. But before I go any further, I would be remiss in telling you that, of course, the chat room is open, so you can go there and comment if you like. You can also call in here. The number is 347-857-2620. 347-857-2620. But, wow, what a week it has been in Columbia, Missouri, out there at Mizzou. And just to give a little recap here before we go into, before we go into what I think is really going on here. The timeline here is that on Monday of this week, the president of the University of Missouri system, man by the name of Tim Wolf, resigned, and he resigned amidst a lot of pressure from black student organizations on campus that he had not done enough to address some racial incidents that had been happening on campus. And so it started right there. And a few hours later, the chancellor of the Columbia campus itself, Chancellor R. Bowen Lofton, he also announced that he was going to step down at the end of this year and he was going to be moving on and doing some other things. But so that's how this whole thing got rolling on Monday. And prior to this, what I think the straw that broke the camel's back here was that maybe a few days, maybe a week before, excuse me, the University of Missouri football players were kind of going on strike. They were refusing to attend practice. They weren't going to play until Tim Wolf stepped down. And so when you have football players on a team from a And what I know about college football, you can fit on the head of a pin. So forgive me if I make any mistakes here and say something that's incorrect. But when you're talking about a football team that brings in millions of dollars every year for a school, and they're in one of the top conferences in the nation, and you are going to, you're talking about a lot of money there. And as we all know, money talks. And the coach of the Missouri Tigers football team, Gary Pinkle, of course, he's a guy I think who was kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, because regardless of where he fell on in this situation, in this scenario, he has to look at football from a business standpoint, not just from a coaching standpoint, but from a business administrative standpoint. And if he doesn't back, if he is not seen as backing up his players, he's going to have a hard time recruiting and things of that nature. So he kind of dutifully went along with his players and saying that they were going to refuse to play if Tim Wolfe did not step down. Well, he did, and time has gone on this week. We have also part of this timeline, before I go any further, is part of the football team's refusal to play was based on a hunger strike, was based on a student being on a hunger strike over this. That's how I don't want to say motivated, because I don't think that's, well, they're motivated, but I'm not sure what exactly they're motivated by. Anyway, a student, grad student by the name of Jonathan Butler, was on a hunger strike over this. And according to all reports, he had not eaten for about a week at the time that Tim Wolfe stepped down. And so the football players were essentially supporting Jonathan Butler in his hunger strike, because immediately after the football players announced that they would be attending practice, and Jonathan Butler ended his hunger strike. Okay, well, a few things, a little information has surfaced since then, and some of the incidents, a few of the incidents in question here, and I'm sure everyone has heard about them, was that someone in a bathroom in one of the dorm or in one of the dormitories had put a swastika of poop, basically, on the wall in the bathroom. And in another incident, a man by the name of Peyton Head, who happens to be the student body president, said he was just walking down the street, just minding his own business, and bunch of guys, maybe it was a bunch of drunken frat guys, who knows, bunch of guys in a pickup truck drove by and called them the N-word. So these are the two most prominent events in question here. So right after Tim Wolfe stepped down on Monday, excuse me, and the football players said, okay, we're going to go to practice, and Jonathan Butler ended his hunger strike. Well, as is what happens in a lot of these stories, the real story starts to come out. The underlying story starts to come out. And I think right now, today, there are far more questions about this whole situation, really, than there are answers. Because the first thing that we learned about this situation was that Well, Jonathan Butler really was not who he said he was. Jonathan Butler is a grad student, and he is not, well, he may feel oppressed, and he may feel slighted, and he may feel, you know, whoever, whatever it is he feels. But Jonathan Butler actually is not a poor, starving, well, he's not starving anymore, I guess, but he's not a poor college student. In fact, Jonathan Butler is a member of a very prominent family in Omaha, Nebraska. Jonathan Butler's father, Eric Butler, is the executive vice president for sales and marketing for the Union Pacific Railroad. And in 2014, he made an annual salary of $8.4 million. This is according to regulatory filings with the SEC. And so basically, not only did Jonathan Butler's father bring in $8.4 million in 2014, his family's net worth is estimated to be at about $20 million. That's a whole lot of oppression and a whole lot of anger. $20 million can really do that to a person. I wouldn't know, but I'm sure it can. And then we found out a little bit more about the center, the person who was at the center of the guys driving by in the pickup truck yelling the N-word. Again, this is a man by the name of Peyton Head, and he is also a wealthy Chicago family, and he has interned in the past. This might be a name that you might be familiar with. He has interned in the past with Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel. And he, there are photos of him circulating around the internet as we speak, shaking hands with President Obama. And he has a lot of training, shall we say, a lot of education on his own, a lot of coaching in the area of community organizing. So right away, there's a pattern here. There's a little bit of a theme emerging here. Well, yesterday, the bigwigs at the University of Missouri system announced a naming of an interim president. And the man who is the new interim president of the University of Missouri system is a man named Mike Middleton. And I believe he is a graduate himself of the University of Missouri Law School. But there are also some other things about Mike Middleton that are emerging. And Mike Middleton was during his college days, he helped to organize, forgive me, I'm sure I'm getting the name of this group wrong. It was a young black collegiate type group on campus. That's fine. Don't have a problem with that. But he also, his hands are not entirely clean in all this. He's not coming in entirely pure as the wind-driven snow. He is, according to our good friend Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit, he posted something yesterday that, according to the Gateway Pundit, last month, Mike Middleton made a video with Jonathan Butler, of prominent Omaha, Nebraska family fame, Jonathan Butler of family worth $20 million fame. Well, Jonathan Butler and new interim Missouri University System President Mike Middleton made a video last month, and the video was called Response to Skeptics. And basically what is in this video, I have not seen it. The video has not emerged to my knowledge. All we know, again, according to Jim Hoft and the Gateway Pundit, is that it exists. And basically what the video says is that there's just rampant racism all over the campus at Mizzou. And young black collegians are the ones who say this. I don't know how much documentation they have. I don't know how much evidence they have. And you know, that's another thing with all of this is that, you know, in this day and age of everyone having a cell phone and everything being recorded and videotaped and monitored and everything else, there was no evidence any guys. No one had a license plate. No one had a description of a pickup truck. Nobody knew how many people were in this truck. No one else saw this incident with student body president Peyton Head and these drunken frat guys or whoever they were driving by in a pickup calling him the N-word. No, there was no eyewitness accounts or any other information other than what he is saying. The poop swastika picture is it's sketchy. While there are people saying that there, and I have seen a photo of it, and people are saying that this photo is that it is the real thing, that this is exactly what the picture of what was in the bathroom in the dorm, what it was. But there are other people who are saying no, this is, they're calling BS on this poop swastika picture, saying no, that this is something that has circulated the internet for quite a while. This is bogus, and they're calling BS on this. So, but I digress. Last month, Mike Middleton and Jonathan Butler made a video called Response to Skeptics. And in the video, they claim all of the rampant, hellacious, horrible racism that is going on the campus there at Mizzou, according to the young collegian. I don't know if there are any other statistics from any other group there on campus, whether it is a possibly campus police, whether it is any other group that may keep statistics on that kind of thing on campus, and I'm sure there must be at least a few more. But according to the young black collegians there on campus there at Mizzou, in this video, if you do not agree with what they say about the rampant, hellacious, horrible, rotten, nonstop racist events that are on campus, well, you are a racist yourself, basically, if you do not believe them and take them at their word. So, all of that going on, also, this protest has really kind of, there are also, if I have time here, there is a list of demands here from the protesters. And, they can be translated. And if I have time today, we'll get back to those and we'll talk about those. But this protest has actually sparked some other protests around the country at other colleges. I believe even at Yale, there was some protest over some Halloween costumes that people were, air quote, offended by. And there's also some marches planned, if they have not already happened, and some other protests going on the campus at in Ithaca, New York. And basically, what these spoiled, rotten college kids who have always been told all their life how special they are, and that they should not be exposed to anything that they don't want to look at or hear or anything like that, because their parents have gone through their entire lives making sure that they're not offended or horrified by anything. Well, basically, what is going on here across the board are some commonality in the demands from these college students. And they all want free college, of course. That would be nice. They all want all of their student debt forgiven. Again, that would be nice. And they also want a $15 an hour minimum wage for people who work on campus. Again, very nice. But what they haven't figured out, and I guess the problem here is that there's not a lot of math majors among these college students. But what they fail to include in their demands is exactly who's going to pay for all of this. Well, I'm sure they just say, well, the government. Well, the government is going to pay for this. And I believe it was yesterday on his show, Neil Cavuto on the Fox Business Channel, interviewed the woman who is kind of the head of these national – in fact, I believe it's tomorrow, maybe today or tomorrow, it is going to be a national student – the Million Student March. That's it. That's what's going to happen. And she is kind of one of the organizers of this. And I really wanted to get a few clips of this interview. It was pretty long. It was about 9 or 10 minutes long. And but basically what she said as they were talking, she told Neil Cavuto that she was fairly certain that most of her peers, most of the people who were participating in the Million Student March, they would – I guess it was that Cavuto had brought up, taxes and how much people pay in taxes and tax levels and things of that nature. And basically what she told Cavuto was that, well, she was fairly certain that her peers would be willing to pay a 90% tax rate as long as they could bring in, about $250,000 a year. Well, for those of you who have not done the math just yet in these few seconds, there are people who have. And if this woman and her friends, her other oppressed, dealing with racism every second of every day friends, if they also do the math, if they pay a 90% tax rate, but they believe they're going to bring in $250,000 a year, well, they may very well bring in $250,000 a year. But after that 90% tax rate is paid, they're going to have a whopping $25,000 left. This is it, people. This is what your college kids are being taught. I don't know how many of you out there sent off normal 18-year-olds to university in August, but chances are they're going to come home for Thanksgiving or Christmas half-witted, mind-numbed, liberal zombie robots, and because it obviously doesn't take a long time in order for this to happen. But I'm not done yet here. We've got a few more thoughts here on the Million Student March and the poor, put upon, oppressed, dealing with racism every second of every day students. We'll talk about them for just a few more minutes. Plus, we got, of course, debate stuff, and we've got the GOP, the establishment GOP. They're sweating. They're sweating it big time. The FBI is expanding the probe into Hillary Clinton's emails. We got all of that, plus I got a ton more stuff. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, for hanging with me today. TGIF, don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, for chilling with me on this lovely, beautiful Sunday. I don't know what day it is anymore. Friday morning here in St. Louis. Hope it is nice and sunny wherever you are. The weekend is upon us, people. We have made it. And we are, of course, talking about, talking about Mizzou, just like everybody else is. And, just to kind of wrap it all up here on what's going on here at Mizzou. And I don't think that this is going to end anytime soon, because also there was a report this morning on Drudge that there are some pretty big liberal donors who are thinking about they're considering being donors to the Black Lives Matter organization. And we already know that George Soros and his ilk, people like him are funding these groups. And so that's really, it's not a surprise. But here's the thing. Bottom line, I think, is that no normal person is going to condone people having to deal with racist events, like people driving by and calling them the N-word, or having to deal with people calling them other racial slurs or poop swastikas, or, you know, whatever you want to talk about. No normal person is going to say that that is correct behavior and that we should look the other way. Of course not. If, in fact, things like this happen and you have evidence, you have a picture, you have a description of the person, you have a license plate number, you have a card, if you have something that people can say, okay, well, let's find out exactly what happened here, and let's find out exactly who and or what is to blame here, so that they can, that there can be an investigation into it, then that's fine. Let's do that, because if there are people who are doing that, be it on college campuses or any other place, let's find out who they are and hold them accountable, because it is not acceptable behavior. It is not acceptable behavior in society today. With that being said, there's several themes going on here. There's the theme of the video with the new interim president of the university system and this dork who is on the hunger strike, who's trying to make people think that he's a poor college student, when in fact his old man is worth $20 million. That's a lot of oppression. $20 million, I'm sure, can buy you a hell of a lot of oppression. But there's a theme here. It's the same thing almost. And here's the other thing too, is that the liberal media, the mainstream media this week, has in almost every single story that they have done about Mizzou, has talked about how close that Columbia and Ferguson are. Yeah, they are. For people who aren't aware of the geographics here, Columbia, Missouri is in the middle of the state, and it is roughly 2 hours away from St. Louis, depending on how fast you drive. An hour and a half to 2 hours away from St. Louis. So one of my questions did the Ferguson protesters, did the Black Lives Matter crowd, did all of those people, did they rent a van, or did they just divvy up in cars? Did they all jump in the car and just head on down Interstate 70 to Columbia? Because as more and more things, the more and more of the real story comes out about this, it seems like, and I heard someone say the other day, it seems like it's all, and not just here at Mizzou, but the other demands of other students on other campuses, like it's all coming from a manual, like it's all been organized. You know, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but it's, there's all some very, very common themes in all of this. So any racial events aside, yes, let's investigate them. And if they did in fact happen, let's hold the people who committed those atrocities, those heinous events, let's hold them accountable, because again, no one needs to have to deal with that. But again, there's a theme here, and I think it's a very common theme that's emerging here in regards to whether or not various assorted leftist groups and organizations are involved here and encouraging what's going on at Mizzou. The other thing is that when you look at all of these college students, you know, this is the generation, and, you know, I don't have any children. I have a furry child. So I don't have any children, so maybe people are going to say, well, you know, who are you? What? How do you know what, you know, you know nothing about being a parent, about raising a child. You know, who are you to say A, B, and C? That may be. But this is the generation, this is the first generation of people who have play dates and who are coddled and who are told they're special all the time. And if you want 2 + 2 to be 5, little Johnny, well, in order not to hurt your self-esteem, by God, then 2 + 2 = 5. And when you finally figure out that 2 + 2 = actually 4 and not 5, that'll be okay too. And we'll be behind you, little Johnny, every step of the way. So they're coddled and they're told how special they are and there's never a wrong answer. And every event that they're in, whether or not they win or lose, they get a trophy. This is the first generation of those students, of those kids, to have been raised that way. And look what's happening. This is what we're getting. They're terrified. They want safe spaces. Actually, what they want is spaces away from other people who are practicing their First Amendment rights and practicing their freedom of speech rights, and they probably have some differing point of views than these sweet little angels, and the sweet little angels can't take it because they haven't been raised to deal with someone who is on an opposing side of anything to them. And so they're frightened by the free speech, and they're uncomfortable, and they don't feel safe. Well, you know what? Life is uncomfortable. Life is sometimes not safe, and life is not fair. And the poor sweet little angels, the poor dear little buttercups here who have been coddled all their lives and have not had to hear or see anything that might offend them, guess what, kids? Real life is offensive, and you may have to deal with it. Those are the inmates that are running these asylums. And also I've heard other people say how amazed they were at the folding like a lawn chair of the university administrations. They're just giving in at every turn to the sweet little angels who don't want anything to upset them and to frighten them. And you know, yes, it could be about money. It could be about media exposure. I'm sure that's what it's about. But it's just, This is scary, people, because A, most of these people are old enough to vote, and these are also the next generation of leaders for our nation. That should scare you enough right there. And I don't know. I don't know if we are, hopefully, somewhere along the way, once these kids, and that's another thing too, is that all of these universities, and we know that for what, at least 25, 30 years, and it's probably longer, that these are not universities of higher learning and the exchange of ideas and all of that, those lofty concepts and ideas. No, they're not. Not for a minute, they're not. We know that basically what they are is liberal indoctrination centers, and they're headed up by old 60s has-been hippies who back in the day were the ones who were instigating the trouble on these campuses. Now they're running them. And not only are they running them, but they're teaching. And they're teaching the young skulls full of mush here all about liberal indoctrination. And again, how many people, I'm sure there's a lot of people, and I've heard them on different radio shows, on TV, and you probably have seen them and heard them too, is that they send their kid off to school in August, a normal 18-year-old kid who has been brought up with the values that their parents had instilled in them at home, which is where it should happen anyway, not by the government, not at school, possibly at church, but basically the first place they should be taught is at home. And so they send them off to school, and they come back for Thanksgiving or Christmas, and they're these zombified liberal, you know, walking talking points. And people are going, what happened to my kid? What happened to my kid? And B, what am I paying for my kid to learn? So there's a lot of things going on here. And I think that we had better wake up, and especially conservatives. Maybe we have not, maybe there has not been a lot of pushback on college campuses for conservative groups, conservative ideas, conservative employees, professors, faculty. There hasn't. And maybe this is a sign that there needs to start being. I mean, how many, every time you hear surveys, there's what, you know, the political donor surveys that there's, you know, 96% of the faculty has donated to Democrats and 4% has donated to Republicans and conservatives. Conservative speakers are chased off campus all the time. Young Republican groups and things of that nature, they do their best not to make sure that these groups don't get a foothold and that they aren't allowed to exist on college campuses. Maybe this is a sign for all of us, for all conservatives, that this is time to start pushing back where it starts, on college campuses. You know, I don't think that you can ignore that any longer if you're a conservative. But again, I don't want to, you know, take up the whole hour here, and I almost have with things going on at Mizzou. But I don't think that we've heard the last of it, and be interesting to see what happens there. Because also this week, of course, we had a presidential debate, and there were only 8 candidates on the main stage this time. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee were relegated to the undercard earlier in the evening. But, you know, by all accounts, and I think so myself, it was a good debate. It was actually a debate. It was not and Ted Cruz, once again, as he always does, hit the nail on the head by calling the whatever that debacle was on CNBC a cage match. This was not a cage match. This was actually a debate, a substantive debating the issues debate. And there was a couple of places where a few of the candidates, you know, the discussions got a little bit heated, but that's what a debate is. And I thought, I've heard other people say, and I completely agree that all of the, that the moderators did a fantastic job. They asked some good questions. And overall, it was a good debate. And I don't know that there were a whole lot of game changers here. I think from the polls that I have seen, a lot of them have pretty much stayed the same. Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, I thought, both had great nights. Donald Trump and Ben Carson also as well. I don't think this time, though, while they had good nights, I don't think that it stood out as much as Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. I think they were the standouts this time in this debate. I thought that Ohio Governor John Kasich came off as a total bully. He wouldn't let anybody speak. I mean, I thought it was almost to the point where they were going to have to cut his mic because he would not let anyone speak. And when he did speak, when it was actually his turn to speak, you know, I mean, he went on and on, it was all they could do to shut him up. And I don't think that's going to if I noticed it, certainly other people noticed it, too. And so I don't think I don't think that's going to be good for him. But I think that there was. And there weren't all the zingers either, the great one-liners, the great sound bites. It's kind of a trade-off because we had a great debate here with great moderators, with great questions, and the candidates really got to I think they really got to put forth their positions on economic issues. But I think the one best moment, both Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz had great nights, and I think the one best line of the night, I think, actually did come from Ted Cruz, and this was during a discussion on illegal immigration and how it very much is also not just an illegal immigration issue, but it's also an economic issue. Let's listen.
Senator Cruz, entitlements. You've argued for raising the retirement age and reducing benefits for future retirees. But reducing any sort of benefits for the elderly has always been notoriously hard to do politically. When Speaker Paul Ryan proposed replacing traditional Medicare with federally funded private plans a few years ago, a liberal group responded with a commercial that featured a granny being pushed off a cliff. What's going to be different this time?
Well, my mom is here, so I don't think we should be pushing any grannies off cliffs. And you misstated what I've said on entitlement reform. What I've said is for seniors, we should make no changes whatsoever. For younger workers, we should gradually raise the retirement age. We should have benefits grow more slowly, and we should allow them to keep a portion of their taxes in a personal account that they control and can pass on to their kids.
I said for future retirees, as you said.
Now, I want to go back to the discussion we had a minute ago because, you know, what was said was right. The Democrats are laughing. Because if Republicans join Democrats as the party of amnesty, we will lose. And, you know, I understand that when the mainstream media covers immigration, it doesn't often see it as an economic issue. But I can tell you for millions of Americans at home watching this, it is a very personal economic issue. And I will say the politics of it would be very, very different if a bunch of lawyers or bankers were crossing the Rio Grande, or if a bunch of people with journalism degrees were coming over and driving down the wages in the press. Then we would see stories about the economic calamity that is befalling our nation. And I will say, for those of us who believe people ought to come to this country legally and we should enforce the law, we're tired of being told it's anti-immigrant. It's offensive. I am the son of an immigrant who came legally from Cuba to seek the American dream. And we can embrace legal immigrations while believing in the rule of law. And I would note, try going illegally to another country. Try going to China or Japan. Try going to Mexico. See what they do. Every sovereign nation secures its borders, and it is not compassionate to say we're not going to enforce the laws and we're going to drive down the wages for millions of hardworking men and women. That is abandoning the working man.
That was a great line there. I think it was the line of the night, again, by Texas Senator Ted Cruz, about people with journalism degrees. If they were pouring across the southern border, it'd be and driving down the wages of journalists, it'd be all you'd hear about. But a couple other tidbits here about the debate was that Marco Rubio talked about his tax plan, which includes providing tax breaks for people with children to strengthen families, which he says is a key point of the plan. And but Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, he is a flat taxer, and Ted Cruz is as well. And I don't think that those are bad plans. A fair tax and a flat tax are definitely something that we should look at. But Senator Rand Paul attacked Marco Rubio's proposal as a form of welfare that would run counter to conservative principles. And his quote was, "We have to decide what is conservative and what isn't conservative." And talking about giving people money they didn't pay, it's a welfare payment. Some people were calling on Ben Carson to be a little more specific. When he talked about his own tax plan, he said that it would create a lot more opportunities for poor people not to be poor, and our policies should be aimed at allowing people to realize that dream. And I don't think that anyone is going to argue with that, but again, I think Dr. Carson needs to be a little more specific about his plan. And I know, of course, that Donald Trump has put forth his plan, and there are parts of it that people have got that are actually pretty good. And really quickly here, before I go to a break, I have some new poll numbers out here. These are the latest from Real Clear Politics here. The Real Clear Politics average here only puts Donald Trump up at about 0.4%. Donald Trump said this is the Real Clear Politics average poll. This averages out the McClatchy Marist, Fox News, Quinnipiac, NBC, Wall Street Journal, and IBD tip polls. Donald Trump, 24.8. Ben Carson, 24.4. Marco Rubio, 11.8. Ted Cruz, 9.6. Jeb Bush, 6.0. Rand Paul, 3.0. John Kasich, 3.0. Carly Fiorina, 3.0. Mike Huckabee, 2.4. Chris Christie, 2.2. Bobby Jindal, 0.8. Rick Santorum, 0.8. George Pataki, 0.3. And Lindsey Graham, coming in at 0.0. I don't know about anyone else, but what does that tell you, Lindsey? Anyway, I'm going to take a very quick break here, and we are, I believe, before I go here, the next debate, I believe, is next month, sometime in December. And, of course, we will talk about that when and after it happens. But I'm going to go to a break real quick. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. We still got a ton to talk about and not a lot of time to do it, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Never knew how much I love you. Never knew how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me. Fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning. Fever all through the night.
Sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night. I light up when you call my name, and you know I'm gonna treat you right. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, I'll fever all through the night.
Everybody's got the fever. Oh, that's just something that you should know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, tell about it.
Romeo loved Juliet.
Uh-huh.
Juliet, she felt the same. When he put his arms around her, he said, Julie, baby, you're my flame. I'll give it fever.
Fever, 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 yeah.
When we kiss it, fever with that flame in you.
Oh, fever,
I'm on fire. Fever, yeah, I'm burning for soon.
Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with me on this fabulous Friday. Of course, we've been talking about Mizzou, talking about the presidential debate this past week. And You know, this is something new. I just found this morning. This is from the Washington Post. And I believe our buddy, the great one, Mark Levin, was also talking about it on yesterday that, you know, with the lead in the polls of Donald Trump and Ben Carson, and those leads are not fading. They're not going away. They, you know, they ebb and flow, you know, a few points here and a few points there, back and forth with each other, but they're really holding steady, and they've been holding steady for quite a while. And, you know, we've got less than 3 months before the Iowa caucus. And the establishment Republicans, well, they are they're sweating. They're sweating it because they don't seem to like the people that you and I like. They like the Jeb Bushes of the world. They like John McCain. They like Mitt Romney. Basically what they like is Republicans who can't win is what they like. And they're sweating now because there is no the big money people apparently are still kind of on the sidelines waiting to see what happens. And there really hasn't been somebody who, you know, I think Ted Cruz is a standout. I think Marco Rubio is a standout. But according to this piece here in the Washington Post, that the establishment really doesn't feel like that there is alternatives here to anybody really emerging from the governors and the senators that are running, you know, to really give Trump and Carson a run for their money. And so now that that the establishment is sweating, well, they're trying to draft, wait for it, yes, Mitt Romney. They're trying to talk Mitt Romney into becoming a late entry into the race. And actually, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, who was also a Tea Party candidate 5 years ago, she kind of explained this very well. She said, quote, "You have a lot of people who were told that if we got a majority in the House and a majority in the Senate, then life was going to be great. What you're seeing is that people are angry. Where's the change? Why aren't there bills on the president's desk every day for him to veto? They're saying, look, what you said would happen didn't happen, so we're going to go with someone who hasn't been elected." And basically where people are, these establishment people have lost election after election after election. The establishment people get elected by you and I. They go to Washington, and nothing happens that they said was going to happen. And apparently the anger and the frustration is just not those aren't valid points and valid arguments for the establishment, for the Karl Rove types. And so they're going to do and it's really interesting. They're going to do whatever they think that they need to do to get Trump and Carson and anybody that they see as not being establishment out of the way. And I don't think I've ever seen it, and a lot of people, too, I think, are saying we've never seen a party so against the grassroots wing of the party, the normal average Joe Sixpack, everyday American wing of the party. And I think it's going to get messy. I think it's going to get a little bloody. But also very quickly here before we have to go, the FBI has expanded its probe into Hillary Clinton's email. They are saying, according to unnamed intelligence sources, that the FBI is focusing on U.S. Code 18, Section 1001, a provision that pertains to, quote, materially false statements given either in writing, orally, or through a third party. And this is a felony punishable up to 5 years in prison. And the wider scope is the expansion of the agency's investigation is also looking at potential violations of an Espionage Act provision relating to, quote, gross negligence in the handling of national defense information. This was announced last week that the probe was going to be expanded. And former FBI agent Timothy Gill explains that the section of the federal statute on the false statements that may apply to Hillary Clinton, quote, is a broad brush statute that pushes individuals who are not direct and fulsome in their answers. It is a coverall, he says. The problem for a defendant is when their statements cause the Bureau to expend more time, energy, resources, time and energy and resources to deconflict their statements and the evidence. And it says one government source tells Fox News that this is a report from Newsmax, by the way, the FBI is identifying suspect emails and then going directly to the agencies who originated them and who, under the regulations, will have final say in the classification. So things may be heating up here for Hillary Clinton. And, you know, Joe Biden, crazy Uncle Joe, has already said that he's not running. He's not in it. But I don't know. I think we all know that he is a plan B should Hillary Clinton be indicted. And a lot of people are saying, ha, indictment. Yeah, right. With this administration. I saw former mayor and former U.S. attorney Rudy Giuliani on with Sean Hannity last night. And Rudy paints a very good picture of Attorney General Loretta Lynch. He describes her as very fair. And he said he believes that if there is a need for an indictment, that it will come from her regardless of political affiliation. But with that, very quickly, before I in River North, which is a suburb of Chicago, kind of a well-to-do suburb of Chicago, well, there is the residents there have new neighbors, and that neighbor is a it's a bondage club, and the CBS affiliate there reports that there are a lot of angry families that are already starting petitions to fight the proposal. Well, they haven't moved in yet. They're going to move in. Public notice went up, and now some residents have already filed formal complaints with the alderman. Other than some noise, Tim Robinson calls Galleria Domain, self-titled kink club, a great neighbor. You hardly notice them, Tom said. They're very discreet about getting in and out of the club. The owners did not answer when the CBS affiliate asked to speak with them. This club is nestled between condos, a car wash, and dry cleaners. The private club has applied to open another location for bondage, discipline, domination, and submission. Not to pass judgment on any element of a person, this is not the type of business that belongs in a residential community, said Stephen Levy. Some of the residents are just grossed out. There's kids living across the street and all up the block, said one resident. Why do we need that in this neighborhood? Others fed up with the mere thought of this kinky new neighbor. Now that the business has filed an application, they'll need a letter of support from Alderman Brendan Riley, who did not return calls to the CBS affiliate. There will be a zoning hearing in March. So, you know, lesson of the day, people, just, you know, find out who your neighbors are, because, well, you never know what's going on next door. With that, I am out of here. Everyone have a fabulous Friday the 13th and a great weekend. Please go to theblacksphere.net, Kevin Jackson, myself, and a lot of other fabulous writers there with lots of interesting stuff for you to peruse. Please go to theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com, facebook.com/BeckyNoble, and on Twitter @PatriotWitch. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. I will see you next time. You believe in America.